Kia ora, tēnā koutou katoa. Welcome to Emirates Podcast, episode 381. Today is Tuesday, May 2nd, 2023. It's now May. Yippee! I've been busy lately doing just ordinary household chore types of stuff, nothing very exciting. Although I did get to mow the lawns this past Friday, which was a good thing, because we then got invaded by an atmospheric river, which is apparently now considered to be a normal, in quote marks, weather pattern, which dumps a lot of rain on the country. Although this morning it was very bright and sunny and looked very cheery outside, but it's clouded over again and looking dismal as it has since beginning on Saturday. And it's not very pleasant at all. But the system has also brought warm tropical air with it. So we've got much warmer temperatures than normal, and it's apparently very humid. I say apparently because I haven't been outside today. And so I don't really know. But I did have to turn the air conditioning back on in the living area because it just got too hot in there today. It got up to 23 Celsius, which is, I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit. So yeah, so that's what we're dealing with at the moment. Now, today I've got three topics I'm going to try to get through today. The first of those is about Australian citizenship. Well, specifically for New Zealanders living in Australia. About a couple weeks ago, the Prime Minister, Chris Hipkins, was in Australia for the announcement by the Australian Prime Minister that from July 1st, New Zealanders living in Australia can apply for Australian citizenship after they've lived in the country for 4 years. Now, this requires a little bit of background. Back in 2001, the Australian Prime Minister of the time, John Howard of the Conservative Liberal Party, Liberal National Coalition, who also famously described himself as George Bush's deputy sheriff, he introduced a policy that took away all of the rights of New Zealanders living in Australia. Now, the citizens of the two countries have always had very special. The two countries have had a special relationship, and the citizens within them have as well. They've been able to go live and work in each other's countries without visas and permanent residence or anything like that, and it worked really, really well. Well, all of a sudden, John Howard decided he wanted to change the rules, and he started talking about these dole bludgers in Bondi, which Bondi is a beach community in Sydney, and the stereotype was of particularly Maori New Zealanders going to Australia, living on the dole, and just living at the beach. Now, of course, it was a stereotype and not based on actual reality. It was actually a bit like Ronald Reagan talking about welfare queens. And it was victimization and it was pandering and exploitation, all that sort of stuff. But what ended up happening is that it meant that there was no safety net for New Zealanders living, working, and paying taxes in Australia. If something happened, they were on their own. It was actually a sort of gratuitous cruelty, in my opinion. And I think I've talked about this on the podcast. I certainly have on my blog, and about how this policy has got to change. And subsequent prime ministers had tried to get Australia to at least soften their stand a little bit, but they never would. And they introduced a special visa category for New Zealanders living in Australia called the special visa something. I forgot what it's called. That was really all there was to it. Now, becoming an Australian citizen requires somebody, for an immigrant, requires somebody to be a permanent resident first. And depending on circumstances, that might not be possible. For instance, there's an age limit, and I don't remember what it is now. But the last time I looked at it, I think it was 45 or something like that. So this has been worked on for decades, for more than 20 years now. New Zealand has been complaining about this policy and trying to get Australia to change it, and now they have. And from July 1st, any New Zealander who's been in the country for 4 years in this special visa category can apply for citizenship. Now, after that, they have to go through the same things as anybody else. They have to have a character check. They have to prove proficiency in the English language, and I've forgotten what else. Oh, they have to attend the citizenship ceremony as well. I think those are the requirements. Now, an Australian who comes and lives and works in New Zealand does qualify for benefits and so on if they need them, and they can apply for citizenship in New Zealand after having lived here for 5 years. And I think they have to live here 8 months out of every year, I think it is. I'd have to double check that. It's in my blog post about this, but I forgot to read it. Anyway, the point is that it's bringing the Australian rules in line with New Zealand's, which is a good thing under any circumstance. So for 20 years, New Zealanders have been demanding, really, that Australia fix this problem and not treat New Zealanders so awfully. So it finally happens, and finally New Zealanders who are living and working in Australia will be able to be treated just like an Australian. This is great news to celebrate, right? Of course not. What immediately happened then is that the news media and, of course, the right-wing parties pivoted to, oh my God, everybody's going to leave New Zealand. We're going to have a brain drain, said the National Party. The New Zealand Prime Minister, Chris Hipkins, was played like a didgeridoo, said the leader of the far-right ACT Party. And it's just like this all of a sudden, this hand-wringing about how everybody's going to leave New Zealand and go over to Australia. Well, that ain't going to happen. Number one, Australia does, depending on what field one is working in, Australia does have, usually has better career options, higher pay, and cheaper housing. And those are facts. They've been facts since forever. And they also have an extensive mining industry, which New Zealand doesn't have. There are all sorts of reasons why somebody might want to go to Australia for economic reasons. However, people, young New Zealanders in particular, have been going overseas to advance their careers since forever. Whether they're going to the UK or Australia or even the US, people will go overseas to get experience, make more money, and then they eventually come home. That's the way it's been since forever. Now, not everybody comes home ultimately. If they're building lives and having children and raising family, then their children have children and so on, they're probably going to stay in whatever country they're in. But that's a different issue. What the right-wing parties and the news media seem to be implying is that all of a sudden everybody who works in New Zealand is going to pack up and leave. And, you know, it's the whole, well, the last person leaving New Zealand, please shut out the lights kind of rhetoric. But people may or may not go overseas now at the same rate that they may or may not have gone overseas before. The fact that they can become a citizen after 4 years isn't going to really change the equation any. It's still about economic opportunities. It's not about citizenship as such. Also, a large percentage of the people who go overseas don't necessarily do it for, if you want to call it that, greed, or even just opportunity or what have you. They can do it for all sorts of other reasons. They might go to the other country for love, like I did. There are a lot of reasons why people will move to another country. Not all of them are about rejecting their homeland for more money or whatever. There's all sorts of reasons. And it's foolish to try to say that this is the end of New Zealand because a 20-year curse has finally been lifted. The right-wing parties, you expect them to criticize anything that happens, no matter what it is, because that's what they do. I mean, because they're out of government. But the fact that the media just played along with it was really quite appalling. But we also saw it in another issue. The revenue minister released a report from Inland Revenue, which is our tax department, which found that the 300-odd richest families in New Zealand had an effective tax rate of 10%, which compares to, say, a supermarket checkout person who pays an effective tax rate of 20% of their income. So clearly the rich, the ultra-rich, aren't paying their fair share in terms of income. Well, the rending of garments and wailing and gnashing of teeth over all of this from the right wing and the rich was deafening. They all were like, oh, yes, but you don't understand, and all this sort of stuff. In other words, it's all the typical things that the rich and their enablers in politics always say, that it's going to cost innovation, it's going to cause a loss of jobs, and all of this sort of bullshit. And it's the same sort of thing we hear all the time whenever anybody talks about the rich having to pay their fair share of taxes, because nobody's asking them to pay more, just to pay their fair share. One of the things that we don't have in New Zealand is a capital gains tax. And so what happened after this study was released, in addition to the rending of garments and wailing and gnashing of teeth, was that the news media kept saying, well, Labor is clearly getting ready to introduce a capital gains tax and a major hike on taxes on the rich. Of course, the right-wing parties were delivering the same lines over and over again. And then the Prime Minister announced that there would be no change to taxes in the budget that will be released soon. I think it's next week. And that it's going to be basically a no-frills budget. So all of a sudden they're like, oh, well, they've got a secret plan to raise taxes after the election. It's like, oh, Jesus. Now, the thing of it is that New Zealand needs a grown-up conversation about taxes and how we fund government and what we're going to spend it on. But we can't have grown-up discussions about this when the right-wing parties and the media both engage in this hysterical overreaction to things that they're making up in their heads. So it's two issues in a row where the media has really screwed up. And I have been openly critical of the quality of journalism in New Zealand, political journalism in particular, that it's shallow and not fact-based enough, and that it too often parrots the talking points of opposition parties, especially on the right wing, rather than saying, now, hang on a minute, what are they on about? There isn't enough analysis. And some of that is because there aren't enough journalists. They're all doing too much work and shortages in newsrooms, all that sort of stuff. But they need to do better. Moving on, because I can rant on that all day. This weekend is the coronation of His Majesty, King Charles III, King of New Zealand and some other countries. And I don't personally know anybody who's planning on watching the coronation itself, except for me. Now, the reason I'm watching, I'm not a monarchist. I am a committed Republican, lowercase r, thank you very much. But I'm watching it anyway for the same reason I watched the Queen's funeral. I've never seen a monarch's funeral before, or had never, and I have never seen a coronation before. And it's entirely possible that I may not see the next one, or if there is a next one. And so I'm not going to take the chance that I might. I'm not going to miss the opportunity to see this, is what I'm trying to say, because it's a legitimate historic event, regardless of what one thinks about the monarchy or Charles personally or what have you. It is an historic event. And from what I've read, I have to give some credit to Charles because he's tried to streamline the process and make it a little bit more low-key than it's been in the past. And certainly the times would demand that. He's still going to face anti-monarchy protests, as he already has, I'm sure. But there is one thing that I had to strongly roll my eyes at. They've decided that they're going to have this thing they call the Homage of the People, where people are going to be invited wherever they are, on TV, out in public, wherever, to make an oath of allegiance to the king. I don't know anybody who's going to do that. I'm not going to do that. Now, the thing is, of course, I did have to make an oath of allegiance to the queen when I became a citizen. It's to the queen and her heirs and successors according to law, which is how it always is. So it was sort of transferred to Charles, I guess. But the thing of it is, most New Zealanders have never made such an oath, unless they're in Parliament or some other duty like that, I guess. But most New Zealanders probably haven't. And I'm sure that most New Zealanders won't be doing that this time either. And it's just, it's a funny thing to me. It's an odd thing to do because it could go horribly wrong, especially if there's a whole bunch of people, you know, seen in videos on television or whatever, turning their back on it or whatever it is they might do. It could be really bad. But at the same time, there are a lot of people who do support the monarchy here and in other Commonwealth countries, including the UK. So, you know, it might be fine. I don't know. But it did strike me as a really odd choice, a really odd thing to choose to do to involve the people. It seems to me there could have been something else. I don't know what, but I don't know. It just struck me as odd. But yeah. So I will be watching the coronation festivities on our main channel. The coverage starts at 7 p.m. our time, which is 8 a.m. London time. I haven't seen any timeline, but I presume that means that the main event is going to be in the wee small hours of the morning. But, you know, it is what it is. It's an historic thing, and I don't want to miss it. But because it could be a late night, I am going to probably have an earlier night on Friday, because that's usually the night I stay up and I watch TV and whatnot. But I probably won't do that this week, because that way I won't wipe myself out completely for Saturday and then Sunday as well. Just one day at a time, I think. But that's most of what's been going on lately. We've had an unusual amount of, actually, technically, well, two of them are international stories. I guess only one of them wasn't. But we don't usually have so much going on in such a short period of time. I mentioned that I was likely to renew the hosting for the Amerinds podcast website, and I have done that, mostly because I didn't turn off the automatic renewal, because I knew I wasn't going to be ready to do anything any sooner than now. So the website will continue for one more year. I'm going to turn off automatic renewals so that if I don't do anything, it'll just go away in a year's time. But so fair warning and all that. If you really do want any old episodes, now's the time to do it, although I can't imagine why anybody would want them. But anyway, but that's it for today. That's it for the second day of May. Oh, we're already on the second day of May, and we already have an episode. Ooh, very special. I'll talk to you soon. Kakete ano. Bye. You can comment on this or any episode of the Amerinds Podcast at amerindspodcast.com, where you can also leave a voice message. You can visit and comment on the Amerinds Facebook page, or you can email me, with or without a voice message, at amerinds@gmail.com. This podcast is a proud member of the Pride 48 Network and is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.